This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
This half hour brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, great new inventory. I went with Ford. Had exactly what I wanted. Had exactly the price I wanted and the financing I wanted. They'll do the same for you. And I didn't sit there and go, oh, he's there. I'm like, believe me, you're going to be treated exactly the same, if not even better. And if you, pre-owned inventory is what your budget dictates, great, okay. Guess what? I was there. They have lots filled with pre-owned inventory, and they have done a great job of going over each vehicle and giving it the Sunbury Motors guarantee, which eases your buying experience. In the service department, you want to have people that can get the job done with inspections. You want people to get the job done with when it's routine and when it's difficult. Sunbury Motors does all of that. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Not one, but two Monday night games. Yippee-dippee-doo. Got two of them tonight. Jacksonville at Buffalo at Orchard Park, and the Commanders at Cincinnati.
Yay?
Well, the Washington-Cincinnati game's on ABC.
Yeah.
The Jacksonville, now that's at 8:15. The Jacksonville-Buffalo game's the first game, and that's at 7:30. So I'm wondering if that, I wonder if that means Buck and Aikman are doing Washington-Cincinnati if it's at 8:15. Well, okay. There are, how many teams are left in the NFL right now that don't have a win? Cincinnati's one of them. Who doesn't have a win yet in the NFL? Cincinnati doesn't. Jacksonville, Tennessee, they don't. Man, those are the only three teams that don't have wins. Jacksonville, Tennessee, and Cincinnati, the only three that don't have wins. Unbelievably, Carolina got off the snide. By the way, Carolina, with Andy Dalton, going back to Cincinnati next week.
Chris Fowler, Dan Orlovsky, and Louis Reddick have the first game tonight.
So they've got the Bills and Jags.
Yes.
Okay.
So you're right, Aikman and Buck are at 8:15, are the 8:15 game.
Huh. Okay. All right. Yeah. About that. So that'll be tonight. Very nice. And so not one, but two. I'll flip back and forth between the two. I'll definitely start with Buffalo, Jacksonville at 7:30. Yeah.
So did the Nittany Lions get anything out of Saturday?
Oh, yeah. In fact, they got a lot out of it, to be honest with you. So let's start with this. The way they played in the second half against Bowling Green carried over to a full game. So that's six quarters in a row, okay, where they played both offensively and defensively at a high level. That means they played at a high level now 10 out of the 12 quarters that they played. And even offensively, they played a pretty high level against Bowling Green. So really, it'd be 11 out of 12 for them, really. It was invaluable because of all the experience, actual game experience players got. DeJuan Lane had, for example, more snaps than anybody. And he's going to need that moving forward. They were able to get Tamir Robinson a lot of snaps, quality snaps. They're going to need that moving forward. Anthony Specka got a lot of playing time. Max Granville, Jalen Harvey, you know. You may need these guys. Joey Schlaffer, Jerry Cross, Quentin Martin, Tyler Johnson, Anthony Ivey, Tysier Denmark. Getting all of them playing time. And when we talk about a standard being set, it always can't be assumed that the starters set the standard and then the backups have to come in and maintain the standard. The starters have to come in and play to the standard, and then the backups come in and they have to play to the standard. Well, they did that all the way through on Saturday. You can't outgain a team by 650 yards and have 38 more first downs. I mean, Penn State had 44 first downs in the game, 718 yards. And only gave up six first downs and 68 yards. You can't do that unless you're playing at a high level against anybody. Look, the game with Kent State, just so everybody understands, the game with Kent State was scheduled in 2021. Okay? And Kent State was on a pretty good roll. You know, for a Mid-American Conference team, getting to bowl games. And Sean Lewis was doing a good job. So they scheduled the game thinking, okay, this will be a good MAC team to play. All right. Okay. You don't know when you play them how it's going to turn out. Just like you don't know when you play UCF in 2013 that Blake Bortles is going to be the quarterback. Right? You don't know. Okay. I mean, in 2021, they won the MAC Division Championship, you know. They won it. Lost to Northern Illinois in the championship game, but that's when Penn State scheduled them. I mean, they went to bowl games in 19, the Frisco Bowl, won it. They went to the famous Idaho Potato Bowl in 21, where Wyoming beat them by two touchdowns. But that's when they scheduled the game. See what I mean? They scheduled the game in 2021 when they were playing some of their best football. I mean, come on. It's like you got to be able to put some perspective to it and not just sit there and go, well, they shouldn't be playing this team. Okay, look, they're not a good team now. I got it. But when the game was scheduled, for them, they were playing pretty well. They had three consecutive winning seasons at that point. All right? In the MAC, they'd gone, 14 and, 5 over a three-year period? What the heck?
when it was scheduled, Deion was still at Jackson State, and nobody had any idea he was going to get Sean to come to Colorado.
Right, and then Sean, of course, you know, was the offensive coordinator there. Now he's the head coach at San Diego State. I mean, Sean Lewis is now the head coach of San Diego State. I mean, it's easy to do everything in retrospect. It's actually easy to look something up to give a perspective. That seems to be the difficult part that some people have in evaluating something. They don't take the extra step that only takes 30 seconds. You don't know what you're going to end up with. You just don't know. Like I said, you don't know when you schedule UCF. All right, UCF, great. And it's like, okay. Oh, you've got to be kidding me. Now they've got Blake Bortles. They're really good. Great. Didn't know that when you scheduled them. That was always one of the interesting things about the Alabama scheduling. Penn State at Alabama scheduled to be on the schedule in 5 and 6. Well, it turned out because of probation, those are the two worst years for Alabama, and they asked to push it back to 10 and 11, and Penn State said yes, in part because it's Alabama. You know, and Penn State's always had a great reputation. You know, always had a lot of respect going back and forth between Alabama and Penn State. Always have. And so they did it. Well, it turned out that's when Alabama was in the national championship run. Perfect. See, timing means everything. Timing means everything.
And scheduling schools like that's going to be even tougher now. Those schools are going to even be more volatile in this new system.
Well, here's something else that a lot of people do not realize. You know, people have talked about making the move from FCS to FBS. You want to know what the price tag used to be to do that? It used to be $5,000. You want to know what the new price tag is to do it, to be allowed from the NCAA to do it? $5 million. How about that? See, that, you know, that changes so many things, because there are schools, let's take North Dakota State, South Dakota State, that you could say, hey, why don't you join? Let's just pick one, okay, for the heck of it. Let's pick the Mountain West. Hey, we've lost these four teams of the Pac-12. We might lose somebody else. Hey, how about North Dakota State, South Dakota State? Just to make the move, what was $5,000 really just a couple of years ago, is now $5 million.
There was an interesting article, I believe, Friday on The Athletic about James Madison before they beat North Carolina, and about how, you know, up until maybe 2 years ago, what they were doing it was pretty smart, because you would get more money moving up. You know, they were doing it the right way. And now, all of a sudden, you know, with the new money situation and maybe having to play players, they're kind of caught in the middle, because they're doing a good job of being a smaller athletic program like that, but not, you know, can they come up with the amount of money to pay the kids now that they are a full Division I member?
Well, I'll give you one that's an interesting one money-wise that you would not think of. That's North Dakota State. Why is North Dakota State interesting monetarily? Name me a state, right, that has low unemployment like they do. I think the unemployment rate in North Dakota is in the upper twos, and has oil. They have oil money in North Dakota.
Don't they have a dome?
Well, they do, but they need another stadium.
Oh, I mean, okay.
They'd have to build one. They couldn't just play in Fargo in the dome. They couldn't do that. But I'm saying, who has the possibilities they do? You know, because I don't think people realize how much oil money there is in North Dakota. Right? I mean, it's not just oil. They got a lot of natural gas up there. No, it's they have people up there that are making money. In other words, donors. I mean, everybody thinks Texas is. Texas has a lot of oil money, right? But, like, a lot of people don't realize North Dakota, like, produces about 1 million barrels of oil a day. Only Texas and New Mexico have more oil production than North Dakota. Now, how does that translate to football? That means that you've got money inside the confines of that state. They could get donors on the NIL front. They can get donors maybe to help them with a new stadium. That's why I think they're in an interesting spot. See, you learned something about oil production today, didn't you?
Actually, the other thing I was surprised about was New Mexico's second.
Yeah, New Mexico's number two, yeah.
I would think Oklahoma would be in there somewhere.
You'd think, and it turns out that New Mexico has more. And, yeah. I mean, I've been to New Mexico. It's not like I haven't seen the oil fields. I have. I mean, they have it. No question about it. It's amazing. And if North Dakota were a country, if they were a country, North Dakota would be ranked 19th in the world in oil production. You're kind of shocked by that, aren't you?
Yeah, that's... I guess my argument against that is you know, they're a big fish in a small pond now. It's a matter, obviously, it's the adjustment of being the small fish in the big pond.
No question. That's why I said the Mountain West.
Yeah.
The Mountain West, I think there would be an opportunity to them for the to be a big fish in that pond with some speed. How about that?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's not a super deep conference that when those schools go to the Pac-12, so yeah.
Right, right. I mean, in South Dakota State, which has been really good, but again, they each need the $5 million to make the jump. Do they want to do it? And right now we're at 134 FBS schools. Well, if four of them make the jump, you're up to 138. That number is growing. The question is whether you can handle it. It's just something to consider. It's not, I mean, I don't know if North Dakota State's going FBS or one or not. But I'm saying that if they did, it's not as if they don't have resources within their own state that may give them a couple of financial advantages that people may not realize they have. Just a thought. Random. We leave the league in random thoughts. Back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
Now, there's certain requirements to go from FCS to FBS. I mentioned the $5 million. But you have to have a stadium that's 35,000. That's a requirement. You have to get the 35,000. That's another one. You also have to have 16 sports. North Dakota State has 13. They'd have to sponsor three more to do it. And, you know, you mentioned the dome. Keep in mind, the Fargo Dome, North Dakota State does not own that. The city of Fargo owns that. So they'd have to come up with financial support to build a new stadium. And keep in mind, being at 35,000 seats, what's the population of Fargo? 36,000. So not everything's perfect. How about that? We say that after every staff meeting.
I would have guessed Fargo was a little bigger than that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's 36,000.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
By the way, Todd, on the category of, let's make sure we're right here, you are correct. Fargo's 130,000. So you were right about that. Just want to make sure we got it right. Talking about North Dakota State. This half hour brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere, wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and out every day, pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. Hall of Famer Ray Dinninger now joins us. Ray, first of all, how have you been?
Just fine, Steve. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. Interesting game yesterday after what happened at the end of the Atlanta game. Anything that you see defensively as to how the Eagles approached it that made a difference against a New Orleans team that had been scoring at will the first 2 weeks?
Yeah, it was quite a turnaround, wasn't it? I mean, after anybody that saw the game Monday night that the Eagles basically gave away to the Atlanta Falcons and all the problems that they were having on defense there, no pass rush, couldn't stop the run, basically looked inept defensively. And then they got to go down to New Orleans and play a Saints team that was red hot for 2 weeks. It looked like about as bad a matchup as you could imagine. But they went down there and played really good. I mean, you got to give a tremendous amount of credit to Vic Fangio, the defensive coordinator, who really obviously spent, he probably didn't sleep a wink all week. I mean, he was probably up all night looking at the tape of the Saints' two games, and the conclusion he came to was, we got to stop the run. Because everything they had done, even though Derek Carr had played very well through 2 weeks, the whole passing game, the whole offense was working off of the run. The run set up everything else. Mm-hmm. So Vic knew that to have any chance in this game, they had to stop the run first. And so he basically went with a five-man line pretty much the whole game. And he brought the two off-ball linebackers, N'Kobe Dean and Bruin, up. Yeah, he brought them up. He played them tight to the line. So they were almost playing seven men up. That's putting a lot of pressure on the secondary, but they did succeed in stopping the run. And once they stopped the run, then that whole offense sort of bogged down. So great work by Fangio coming up with the scheme. And then the other part of it was his defensive players really rose to the occasion. I mean, you know, they missed so many tackles. I mean, they had to set the world record for missed tackles in the Atlanta game. And they didn't miss many, and they didn't miss many yesterday. And it was the best game that Jalen Carter had played in a very long time.
How much do you think Carter was helped by mostly getting one-on-one matchups because essentially the Eagles were playing a seven-man front?
Helped a lot, and I think they might have to do more of that kind of stuff because he's been, I mean, everybody knows that he's the best. He's, you know, he's the real difference maker on that defensive line. I mean, he's the guy that can wreck a game plan pretty much by himself. Mm-hmm. That's why they drafted him when they did. And for half a season last year, he looked like it. I mean, in mid-season last year, I mean, he was everybody's pick for Defensive Rookie of the Year. And then the second half of the year, his play really tailed off. And at the start of this year, you know, the first two games, he really was almost invisible. But boy, he took over yesterday's game. And you're right, when they go five man up front, it gets him a lot of one on ones. And sometimes by design, you know, they can put Davis over the center to get the double team, and they could slide Carter out to a position which is more or less of a three technique, where he can play in the gap, and he's also very effective. But he's got that kind of talent. I mean, he has the ability, and everybody knew this. He has the ability to be a really dominant player in the defensive line, and for this team to be really good, he has to be.
What have you thought of the rookie Quinyon Mitchell at corner to this point?
Very good, but not surprising. I mean, I had going into the draft after watching a lot of college football last year, then watching the postseason bowl games, and then seeing the Senior Bowl. He was the guy that I circled as the guy. I said, "This is the guy I think the Eagles need. This is the guy that I want the Eagles to get." Yeah, I mean, that was how I felt about it. You know, I know there was some concern about the fact he was coming from a relatively small college program. I mean, Toledo, you know, level of competition. But, I mean, once he got to the Senior Bowl and was playing against the best guys, I mean, you saw that he could cover them too. Mm-hmm. So I thought that he was, for a team that was desperately in need of talented players on the back end, I thought he was the best of that crop. Now, the thing that surprised me, Steve, was, you know, having said that, going into the draft, I thought, well, I think he's the guy, but they're not going to get him at 22. I mean, if they want him, they're probably going to have to trade up to, you know, 10, 12, somewhere up there to get him. But they were lucky because everybody was picking offensive players. Everybody was running for quarterbacks. So, lo and behold, he falls right in your lap at 22. So good for the Eagles. I mean, they come away with a player who, you know, I think is going to be a long-term starter for them, and already just through three games has shown you that he belongs.
And then the acquisition on offense, I mean, I feel like in a lot of ways Saquon Barkley bailed out the whole deal yesterday with how he played. What have been your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I felt when they made the deal for him, which frankly surprised me, you know, because the Eagles have never been a team that put a whole lot of stock in running backs. I mean, they sort of bought into the conventional NFL wisdom that you don't spend a whole lot of money at the running back position. Running backs are kind of interchangeable, and you know that's where you find those guys in the third, fourth, fifth round. You sign them for one contract, then you let them go. But I mean, there are certain players who are special and are a lot better than that. And I felt that Barkley was that. And when the Eagles made the move to go get him, it was pretty bold, and a lot of people here were surprised. But I said right away, this guy's going to come in here and he's going to be really good. I mean, he's going to change the face of this offense. I mean, you put him on the field with some of these other weapons that you've got, you know, Devontae Smith, A.J. Brown, Dallas Goedert, those types of players, and you put him out there in the backfield with Jalen Hurts, that's a defensive coordinator's nightmare. And he has been, right from the start, I mean, all through training camp, not that he played a lot in the preseason games, but you just saw it. I mean, you just saw how good he was, how instinctive he was, how fast he was for a big man. And, I mean, all the coaches knew that once we get him saddled up and ready to go in a regular season, he's going to make us a different football team, and he has.
Talked about the value of running backs. So many teams are playing cover two right now, which invites you to run the football. What has been your thought about scoring being down, a lot of field goals, and how to beat cover two?
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, you kind of answered your own question right there. I mean, that's, everybody's saying, gee, look at scoring. It's down, you know, an average of 7 points a game, which is a lot, I mean, given where scoring was for a long time. But that's why. I mean, it's this whole philosophy. And even teams that really want to throw the ball, I mean, teams that are built to throw the ball, even they're running it more. Because if defenses are playing the cover two, if defenses are playing the two high safeties all the time, which pretty much everybody is, then the way you get them out of it is to run the ball. You know, okay, if they're going to play the two safeties deep, then they're light in the box, and if they're light in the box, it gives us a chance to run. And even if we want to throw, even if that's really what we want to do, you know, we're going to have to run the ball some to get that one of those safeties out of there and allow us to do what we want to do, which is throw the ball. You're going to have certain teams that just flat, they want to run. I mean, there's some teams that are built to run. That's their philosophy. That's what they want to do. But even the teams that want to throw the ball are going to have to run more than they would ordinarily to try and force defenses to bring one of those safeties down. That's what you got going on now. And I know a lot of people are unhappy with it. I know the people in the league office don't like it because they like points. They like wide open football. They like points. You know, they think it's more entertaining. It makes the fantasy people happier if there's a lot of offense. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, most of your defensive coordinators have just taken the philosophy, look, we're not giving up the explosive play. We're just not going to do it. And we're going to keep the two safeties high. We're going to keep everything in front of us. And that's the type of defense we're going to play, and it's going to keep us in the game. And so the offenses are going to have to come up with something else to do with it, deal with it. And what they're coming back with is the old-fashioned, good old run the rock.
Yeah, run the rock, because I'll deliver an opinion here. I think there are three reasons why we're seeing it. One, cover two has been effective. Number two, there aren't enough quality quarterbacks in the league. In other words, if you have a quality quarterback, you've got a gem. And number three, the offensive lines aren't giving them time to develop deeper plays because pass protection-wise, they aren't good enough. That's just my opinion. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's I can't argue with any of that, Steve. I think that's pretty true. And, you know, one of the real storylines that's developing around the league now is the plight of the young quarterbacks and seeing what's happening to the young quarterbacks. I mean, what's happened to Bryce Young already? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the number one pick has been benched two games into his second year. Mm-hmm. And you look around the league now, you know, Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix and all these guys. I mean, you had six quarterbacks taken in the first round of the draft this year. He had six. Here you are 3 weeks into the season. They have combined for zero touchdown passes. Mm-hmm. Now, three of them haven't played, but the three that have played have thrown 196 combined passes, and not one of them has thrown for a touchdown yet.
Yeah, that says it all. All right, now let's get to Nick Sirianni. At some point, he had to talk about what he has and hasn't been doing. On the broadcast yesterday, Joe Davis, and they obviously got this from Sirianni, they want to recapture their mojo from 2 years ago as to how they attack fourth downs and so forth and be successful with them. Okay. Like anything, when you're successful with it, the world loves you. When you are not successful with it, the world suddenly forgets to love you. Well, they haven't been successful with it as often as they were before. How do you view it, especially because I view it on time, score, and situation, and I think he's determined to do it whether it's square peg, round hole, and not on time, score, and situation. You may have a completely different view.
No, I agree with you, and it's one of the problems with the whole analytics cult of people is that they sort of view every situation as the same. You know, that the same down and distance metric on a certain field position is the same for the Carolina Panthers and the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, it's just in this situation right here, you go for it. Well, maybe some teams do, but not necessarily every team. You have to go by what your team is doing, what your team's capable of, who your opponent is, home or away. Whether, I mean, all of that stuff factors into it. It's all the football stuff. It's all the stuff that coaches have been factoring in to their decision making for 100 years. Going back to Amos Alonzo Stagg, that part hasn't changed. What's changed is you have a whole bunch of people with slide rules up in the press box that are telling you, no. In this situation, no, you don't kick the field goal. You go for it. And, sometimes that's right, but sometimes it's wrong. Now, one of the things about what makes Philadelphia a bit of a unique situation is Philadelphia is the home of the Philly special. The ultimate against all odds fourth down gamble in a Super Bowl that helped you become a world champion. Mm-hmm. So everybody here is a little bit more inclined to have that go for it on fourth down mentality. Not that Nick Sirianni was a part of it, but he's kind of inherited it. And he had some success with it last year. Certainly the tush-push thing that they had on fourth down was almost unstoppable, which gave them a weapon that nobody else had. But now he's carried it over into this season where they aren't quite the same team. They aren't built to have the same kind of success without Kelce snapping the ball. And yet he's still making the same kinds of decisions, and he's made some that just had me just scratching my head saying, what are you thinking? I mean, just to isolate one was the one right before halftime.
Yes.
In a 3-0 game, you got the ball down, you're in inside their 10-yard line. Sure, field goal. You got 4th-and-1 with just 20 seconds to go, one timeout. And you go for it. That's so silly. I mean, the likelihood is that you're going to wind up, even if you make the first down, you're probably going to wind up kicking the field goal anyway. Wow. So take it right now. Why run a fourth down play and maybe lose those 3 points? It was bold, but it was foolish. And Nick's been making a lot of those kinds of decisions. Now, it contributed to them losing a game Monday night against the Falcons. They managed to salvage yesterday's game that they easily could have lost. But I think right now, if I'm Nick, I got to take a step back and say, maybe I have to reevaluate how we're doing things here. Now, because it's a little bit different, Steve, because Nick has really fully handed off the play calling to Kellen Moore.
Yes.
He said during training camp, he said, listen, it's a new way of doing business around here. I'm going to be kind of the CEO head coach. I'm going to let Kellen run the offense. I'm going to let Vic Fangio run the defense, and I'm going to be the overall head coach, which sometimes, he's not controlling every play call. But I think he said yesterday that call down, that 4th-and-1 that he handed off to Saquon and they got stopped and lost the field goal. He said, that was my call. And no matter who made it, it was the wrong call. And in a game like that, it could have cost you dearly.
Yeah, because I think that's an interesting answer, because the key part of that, as you said, every team's different. He has different personnel than 2 years ago. Right, it's what you're capable of doing. You can't force it along the way. You have to let things be organic. And something about analytics, and I'm with you all the way on the analytics. Look, analytics are useful. I'm not saying they're not. But you have to use your own football or whatever sport common sense with it. Analytics will tell you you should be going for it on every fourth down. It's 4th-and-2 at your own 11-yard line. You're going for it. No, you're not. You're punting.
Right.
But they tell you you have to go for it on all of them. That's what you're dealing with here in terms of what that chart allegedly says.
No question. No question, Steve. And part of the problem is that if you go into, and not just the Eagles, but into the front offices of 32 NFL teams, they have like whole wings of their buildings are taken up by analytics people.
Yeah.
I mean, people walking around in white lab coats, that spend all day at the computer, and feeding numbers and stats and crunching numbers in computers, that will come up with all of this stuff. That if it's 4th-and-6, when you're inside this yard line, you go for it because you can make it 60% of the time, and if you make it, then you will wind up scoring a touchdown 52%. They'll give you all of these numbers. And it has become, I don't want to say it's infected from all this, but let's put it this way, it's there. And the people that own the teams are the ones that put it there. And so if you're the coach, if you're, you know, if you're the guy on the sidelines with the visor and the headphones, and you're the guy that's making the decisions, you know, you've come up through the game making decisions one way, based on what your gut tells you in a situation. And you're right, everything is contingent on the opponent, the field position, the playing conditions, how your guys are doing, or do you have your full complement of offensive linemen? If maybe you're missing one guy, maybe that changes everything. There's all that stuff that from a football sense has to factor into these decisions. But you have these other people who have a lot of influence and a lot of sway in your organization that are looking at their numbers in front of them and saying, okay, well, yeah, we got to go for it here. What? He's not? Oh, that's a mistake. And if it doesn't work out, then the coach knows he's going to walk into the office on Monday, and somebody's going to be saying, the boss wants to see you. And then you're going to go in, and then they're going to lay the spreadsheet out in front of you and circle that and say, well, why didn't you go for it there? You know, and that's a conversation no coach wants to have. But frankly, that's the kind of thing that all of these guys are dealing with. And does it get in the way of what you're talking about? You know, whether you want to call, going by your gut or just old football, old school football, all those things. Does it get in the way of making those decisions? Sure, it does. And sometimes you can live with it, but sometimes you can't. And I think that sometimes, and you've seen Sirianni now in the last two games, get tripped up on that kind of thing, because I think he's trying to serve the analytics people, maybe at the expense of the team. Now, he got away with it yesterday, but he didn't get away with it against Atlanta.
Right. Well, it's interesting. You can't have the career that you've had if you always did everything by the numbers. There are how many times, probably countless times, you could give me where your gut or your feel for the game led you in the direction that ended up in a great story. The best ones are the ones, to me, that have a feel for it and understand how and when to use the numbers and how and when to go with your gut feel. Because, I mean, that's what, to me, that's what a big part of what's made your career so great.
Yeah, I don't know if that's exactly analogous, but I know kind of what you're saying. I remember having this discussion with some, we're now into a whole new generation of coaches. I mean, these guys are all young. It's a new breed of coaches. It's a new breed of general managers, really. It's a new breed of everything, frankly.
Yep.
But I remember when the NFL passed the 2-point conversion. We're going back a few years now, but when they finally okayed the 2-point conversion. And I was still at in the newspaper business, and I talked to a bunch of the head coaches. Said, "Okay, now you got this. You got the 2-point conversion. Now, how do you feel about it?" And they all said, "We're not doing that." You know, I mean, yeah, you can put the rule in there, but I mean, telling me that I can go for two is like telling me I can eat snails for breakfast. Oh yeah, I can, but I don't want to. You know, they're going to play the game the way they want to play the game. I mean, if you want to call it old school, fine, that's old school. But now, you know, those guys, you know, the Schottenheimers and the Shulas, and they're gone now. And now you've got a lot of younger coaches that are in there making those decisions, and they're more amenable and they're more open to the analytic style of football. But I do think that sometimes it gets in the way.
Mm-hmm. I watched teams chase points all weekend after going for two. That's me.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, Steve, I remember in the game that they lost Monday night against Atlanta.
Yeah.
Somebody said, they wound up losing the game, and I said they should. That second possession they had that long drive that took it all the way down the field, and they go for it on fourth down, they get stopped, and they get nothing. And I said, just take the points. Just don't get cute here. Look, you had a nice long drive. Scoreless game. Let's take the points. Just take the points. And people were saying to me afterwards, "Oh, that's easy for you to say. You're looking back at a 1-point loss, and you're talking about 3 points from back in the first." No, I said, no. It's not a second guess. I was saying it at the time,
yes.
Because I just think, see, when you get into this analytics thing, I think sometimes the people have to understand the psychology of football and the psychology of players. And if your offense has taken the ball and they've had whatever that was, 14, 15 plays, or you took it all the way down the field, just take the points. You know, don't do all that and have the team move the ball all the way down the field and walk off the field with nothing. I mean, that's deflating for a team. So, okay, take the 3 points and be happy with it. You know, did that make the difference in the game? I don't really think so. But still, at the time, and even in the aftermath, I thought it was a mistake.
Lombardi in the 1960 NFL championship game. I should have kicked the field goal. He says, I'm never not going to take the points again.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's really the, you know, I just always feel that that's the way to go. I mean, if you get into a situation early in the game, in the first quarter, just take the points. I mean, I think that's almost, to me, that's almost a universal rule. Now, you get into the game, you're into the second half.
That's right.
The other team is scoring points like crazy. Your defense isn't holding up. You're into a back-and-forth kind of game where points are absolutely critical, and you say, okay, 3 points isn't going to do it for me here. I got to gamble. I got to go for the touchdown.
Yep.
That's a different situation. You know, the game, you now understand where the game's going. You understand what the other team is doing. And I think the calculus changes at that point. But in the first quarter, in a scoreless game, you've had a long drive, you're in position to take the 3 points. Just take the 3 points. I mean, to me, I just think when you overthink that kind of stuff, you're just going to get yourself in trouble.
Time, score, situation. Hey, always, always a pleasure. Thanks so much. We could have gone on for a couple hours. Not what you wanted to do, but I would have.
Hey, always a pleasure to talk to you, Steve. Anytime. Take care.
The great Hall of Famer, Ray Dittinger. This half hour brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza is having their fall kickoff blitz. Savings of up to $12,416 and financing as low as 0%. Score a great deal on the award-winning 2024 Ford Bronco Sport, and SMC has 18 in stock, priced from as low as $29,965. Sunbury Motors is going to give you a Hail Mary of a deal on over 50 2024 Ford Escapes, priced as low as $27,915. Plus, get 1.9% financing for 60 months. SMC is the Hall of Fame of Ford F-150s, with 35 available, with discounts of over $12,000, and they are slashed to the lowest price of the season, starting at only $48,859. Don't let the play clock run out on these awesome deals, as the final drive of savings ends Monday, September 30th. Sunbury Motors is a fifth-generation Ford dealer, proudly owned by the Mertz family for over a century.